We'll now turn to the last case of the day, number 052741, the United States against Kendall.
May it please the court. My name is Alexander Nguyen, and I represent the defendant appellant Jerome Kendall in this appeal. This is a case in which the district court, in order to sentence Mr. Kendall as a career offender, looked beyond the limited universe of documents properly before it to find an additional fact. It then used this additional fact to retroactively supplement the factual basis of the original conviction. This was error, and Mr. Kendall asks that the court vacate his sentence and remand for sentencing. The records before the district court showed that in 1996, Mr. Kendall pled guilty to burglary, second degree, of an inhabitable structure.
Mr. Nguyen, let me ask you, if instead of Mr. Kendall's lawyer, Mr. Kendall himself at the sentencing hearing had stood up and said, "The inhabitable structure that I was convicted of burglary was a personal residence." At that point, would that be enough, in your view, to support this enhancement?
I think, Your Honor, if Mr. Kendall had said that in Missouri I pled guilty.
His lawyer goes on and on about how it was, a residence and it was the young Mr. Holbrook and so on. But I'm trying to postulate that it had been Mr. Kendall himself who had made it clear that earlier Missouri conviction had, in fact, involved not just any old generic inhabitable structure, but in fact a residence, a dwelling. Would that be enough, in your view, to permit use of that earlier conviction for the career criminal purpose?
Your Honor, I don't believe that would be. And the reason that's true is because under Shepard and under this case, this court's case in Holtz, the only documents that a sentencing court is supposed to look at are documents that are conclusive, that is, used in determining or adjudicating the guilt in the original conviction, and contemporaneous with the original conviction.
So even an admission is, I find that striking because, in fact, in this record, we have something I think may be the equivalent of that, which is in your appendix, you set forth the plea agreement between the government and Mr. Kendall, and in paragraph 26 of the plea agreement, it says the defendant and the United States agree on the following points, prior convictions for involuntary manslaughter and second degree burglary of a residence in Cape Girardeau County, Missouri. So he has agreed with the government that it was burglary of a residence, not just any old inhabitable structure. And I find it hard to imagine that you couldn't, in a sense, waive the right that maybe Shepard and some of these other cases give you.
Your Honor, under the facts of this case, Mr. Kendall would have had to explicitly waive his right and explicitly stipulate to the fact that the basis for the conviction in Missouri was that he had been in a residence. What the district court in this case did was it made an additional factual finding at the sentencing hearing based on documents that were under Shepard, the Supreme Court's case in Shepard, and under this court's case in Holtz did not allow it to do that, and therefore that was error. This policy may seem a little bit technical, but it's actually rooted in sound public policy. For example, it's based on efficiency, for example. The practical difficulties of factual finding at the sentencing hearing with respect to an earlier conviction, which in Mr. Kendall's place took place 8 years before You can imagine a slippery slope in which the sentencing courts would simply ask Mr. Kendall, well, were you in fact in the residence, and that's not allowable. In fact, in this court's holding in Holtz, you could imagine this the court asking, well, Mr. Holtz, were you actually in a residence? That's clearly not allowable. But it's also rooted in fairness. Mr. Kendall, 8 years after the fact, cannot be relied upon or cannot be expected to defend himself or comment or actually represent what actually was the basis for the conviction of his burglary 8 years before. And you can't expect Mr. Kendall or his attorney to be artful in avoiding saying the magic words at the sentencing hearing 8 years later and then end up having his sentence enhanced as if he had in fact pled guilty to having been in a residence as opposed to merely an inhabitable structure.
But you have to admit, Mr. Nguyen, that the strategy that you are pursuing on appeal to make this, you know, rely only on the charging documents and the earlier judgment of conviction is quite different from the strategy that Mr. Kendall's lawyer was pursuing before the district court, where it seems to me, anyway, he's basically trying to say to the district court, yes, there is this conviction there, but here are really all the facts about it, and it's not nearly so bad. And in fact, probably mostly for cooperation, but for all I know, partly because of this, the district court gives him a huge discount over what the sentencing guidelines range would have called for. You know, he goes from whatever it is, 322 months down to 225, and the government hasn't made any complaint about that. So maybe the strategy worked. Maybe the district court was listening to these ameliorating facts, listening to the cooperation, and figures 225 is enough.
Your Honor, you're raising really two points. One, both of which I'll comment on. One is the issue of waiver. Has he, in fact, you know, made a strategic call to pursue one argument over another?
Right.
The other one is where's the harm? As to waiver, Mr. Kendall's plea agreement explicitly reserved any finding that he would be found as a career offender. That includes factual bases, legal bases, and the effect of this. In Webb, which I cited, the explicit plea agreement reserved the right to appeal an outcome, and that, the court concluded, includes the manner in which the hearing was conducted. Furthermore, on page 6 of the government itself admitted that Mr. Kendall objected to the use of the second-degree burglary conviction. So we would submit, Your Honor, that the scope of what he was allowed to bring on appeal is actually very broad. As to the harm, Mr. Kendall, it's true that the district court gave a huge discount. However, if Mr. Kendall had not been sentenced as a career offender, the sentencing range would have been between at lower end at 151 months, which is lower than what the district court ultimately gave him, which is 165 months on count 6. Now, the government in the plea agreement explicitly said that if Mr. Kendall was not found to be a career offender, it would recommend a sentence at the lowest end of the sentencing guideline, which in this case was 151, not 165 months. So there is an injury that Mr. Kendall hopes to address. Secondly, Your Honors, the other sources that were outside of the contemporaneous and the conclusive universe of documents that the court could have looked at include, for example, the 2004 pre-sentencing report, which in turn cites a 1999 parole report. This parole report, again, Your Honors, is outside of the scope of the limited documents that the court can consider according to Shepard and according to Holtz. It was created 3 years after the original conviction, and so Mr. Kendall did not plead guilty to the facts in this 1999 report, did not enjoy any of the procedural safeguards of due process, for example, cross-examination or the right to challenge. And so this document cannot be used in enhancing Mr. Kindle's sentence. Thus, the additional finding that he had been in a house was made long after the fact of conviction, looking beyond the facts supporting the conviction, unsupported by the contemporaneous plea agreement without a jury under a preponderance standard. For these reasons, Mr. Kindle asks that this court vacate his sentence and remand for resentencing.
Thank you, counsel. We'll hear now from Mr. Bruce.
May I please the court? Colin Bruce, on behalf of the United States. I was not the trial attorney in this case. We'd ask you to affirm the judgment and conviction in this of the district court. I think, Judge Wood, what you were trying to express when you asked the question, well, what if Mr. Kindle himself had said, yes, I robbed it? Sure, that would have addressed the issue. We have defendants all the time at sentencing admit to various facts, which case law says normally would have to be proven up. It's just not done. This really comes down to a case of, I don't want to use the term ambush, but essentially a district court doesn't know that whether or not it's a dwelling is an issue. I mean, here the defense attorney is following the strategy, understandably at the time, because we're talking it's in June after Booker is decided in January, the defense attorney, Mr. Noel, who's a very experienced attorney, is thinking, hey, I can make some headway here. What I'll argue is, yeah, the career offender guidelines say burglary counts as a crime of violence, but I can really explain it was more of a theft or maybe a criminal trespass rather than a true burglary. And post-Booker, maybe, under Booker, I can get Judge Scott to say, I'm going to find that doesn't qualify, and drop his range to the floor, back down to the non-career offender status. That was a strategy he took, and I think you can see from the result, in fact, where the defendant got a much less sentence than even the bottom of the range, or even less than the government's recommendation after the downward departure motion, I would suspect that strategy worked. But that, again, that was a strategic decision. Frankly, I think it's very easy to surmise from Mr. Noel's argument, the arguments advanced both in the written objections and when he argues in front of Judge Scott, he knew it was a burglary of a house. I mean, why raise an issue that's frivolous? If push comes to shove, the government could simply have filed the Missouri change of plea document, and certainly you're not going to curry favor with the district court by first raising a frivolous argument and then turning around and saying, oh, but now that you've found that it's a house, which we all know it was, let's now talk about why it's really just a theft, not a burglary.
Well, what about this statement in the plea agreement, paragraph 26? You have the two of you agreeing that it was second-degree burglary of a residence, and I don't understand anybody to be arguing that there's a real difference between a residence and a dwelling. This isn't something you mentioned in your brief, but it seems to me you might have.
I think my response is you're better than I am at reading plea agreements. As I said, I wasn't the trial attorney. I overlooked that. If I would have seen that, I certainly would have pointed out, by the way, he already admitted to residence in the plea agreement. He signed it. That also counts. I honestly just didn't see it. Like I said, I wasn't the trial attorney. If I would have spotted it, I was honed more in on what he argued. Because I think you can see, you know, in a lot of ways, I was coming to this case sort of like you were, a blank slate. I didn't know anything about the appeal. Mr. Risley, by the way, is in Iraq. That's why I'm here. I read it. I read his objections, and then I read the sentencing. And my first thought was, well, wait, he's talking all about a house. Why is this even an issue? I didn't. If I would have spotted that in the plea agreement, I would have done so. So I compliment you for spotting that. I didn't see that. Unless the court has any questions, I'll return the balance of my time and go back to Champaign by the airport, which is near a funeral or near a cemetery.
Thank you, Mr. Bruce. How much time does counsel have? 1 minute. Thank you.
Your Honors, the only relevant question that a sentencing court is supposed to ask at sentencing is not about the nature of the conduct, it is about the nature of the conviction. Simply put, Mr. Kindle's quarrel is not with whether or not he was actually in a house, it is with the district court's retroactive application of that fact to supplement the record, the factual basis of the original conviction. facts gleaned from later sources outside the limited universe of documents approved of in Shepard and Holtz cannot be used as the government urges and that as the district court did to construe and supplement the factual basis of conviction. To put it bluntly, as this court in Holtz has said in the past, it just does not matter what the defendant did. The only question is what he was convicted of, and the only thing that answers the question is the charging document. Based on these arguments and the arguments in the brief, Mr. Kindle asks this court to vacate his sentence and to remand for sentencing.
Thank you, Mr. Nguyen. Sir, you took this case by appointment of the court. You have the deep thanks of the court for the very fine job you've done both in briefing and oral argument for your client.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Indeed, our thanks to both counsel in the case. The case will be taken under advisement. We have completed the call of the morning, and therefore the court will rise until 9:30 tomorrow.